As a kid, Dan Richards climbed trees and built forts in the countryside of Western England. Since then, his enthusiasm for adventure has taken him to untamed landscapes around the world. Some even come with a place to stay and a breathtaking view. For his book, Outpost, A Journey to the Wild Ends of the Earth, Dan explored the huts, cabins, and refuges that have sheltered wilderness adventurers for decades. He joins us now on Travel with Rick Steves to take us to these secret worlds that you won't find on Airbnb. Dan, welcome.
Hello, thank you for having me.
You mentioned in your book that it all started with a polar bear pelvis that sat on your father's desk. Can you explain that?
Just before I was born, my dad came back from an expedition that he had done to Svalbard in the high Arctic. When he was younger, he was a mountaineer and also a bit of an explorer, and he went to this, you know, the most northerly human permanent settlement on Earth, which is called Neolicent, as part of a sort of geology expedition. And when he came home, he unpacked his bag and he had this most amazing, almost alien artifact, which was this polar bear pelvis. Very old when he found it. So, you know, he never sort of met the bear involved, but he found this kind of bony frame and brought it home. And as you say, it kind of existed as this incredible object in his study.
So there's the polar bear pelvis and then a photograph of your dad in Svalbard.
Yes. Wow. And he'd stayed with his team in a number of sheds up there, just very, very rudimentary, very fragile little buildings where they had stayed for a night or two.
So when your school friends are going to Mallorca for their summer break, you decide to go to Svalbard and find that shed. Tell us about how you got into going to these remote outposts, because you've gone to these places all over the world.
Well, in light of my dad's trip, I began to think about these outposts as witness, in a way, to amazing adventures and travels that people had had over centuries, really. And often the people are gone, and the only thing that remains is their jumping off point. And that could be a base like Scott's Base in Antarctica, or it could be a beacon like a lighthouse or a fire watching cabin. And perhaps these places are now out of use, but they still exist as these kind of amazing survivors and memorials to things that went on. And I began thinking about that, and also the way that often creative people will try and make a shed or a Spartan space either in their house or in their garden in a way to try and sort of interact with the muses or just create enough kind of clear space to think and create. So I began to combine those.
That is so important. I just love going to the remote fjords on the west coast of Norway and finding the little tiny cabin where Edvard Grieg, the great Norwegian composer, would work. And you can see the simple piano he composed on, and you can look out the window and see the solitude and the pristine nature and the vastness of it all that inspired him. And you can imagine that solitude was his muse.
Absolutely. I think a lot of the places that I visited were like that. They had just enough architecture to make some difference, so you weren't completely outside. Mm-hmm. And Thoreau has that line where his Walden Pond hut, he was caged amongst birds. So the birds were free, and there he was with, you know, at his desk, just in the nature.
So I suppose venturing to these places, you would prepare yourself to know what was the purpose of this hut and what is the humanity of it? What was the struggle? What was the heroics of this hut? And then when you go there, it becomes a little more rewarding and a little more meaningful.
Yes, absolutely. And some of them have had amazing double, triple, quadruple lives. So there were sail house that I visited in Iceland, and these are buildings that are incredibly rudimentary at the start, and they were built by the early Norse to make crossing the very barren interior of Iceland possible. So they were join the dots kind of stations along the way. And they started out being almost little igloos, if you can imagine an igloo that was made of turf and rocks. Mm-hmm. And then over the years, they've been rebuilt so many times that now they look like what you might recognize as a sort of prairie farmstead in a way. But they still retain the foundations and the story and the myth and the ghosts of all of these different incarnations and all of the travelers who've passed through them. And I found that really fascinating.
And you can hike to one of those. What was it like reaching
Absolutely.
A house of joy in the middle of Iceland?
It was amazing, because I think I describe it in the book as driving over this featureless, because we were renovating it, we actually drove out. But you can imagine the Norse walking over this featureless terrain and then seeing this little hummock, as it would have been in their day, appearing. And the house of joy, you know, you can imagine the joy that, you know, you're sleeping, you have a roof. tonight. Mm. You know, you're going to be warm. Because if you miss that, if you get lost, if you can't find it, then you're out on a permafrosted, completely barren sort of tundra. So the need to get in and get warm was immense and very kind of, you know, essential and elemental. And when I approached Hvatnes, which was the cell house that I visited, I describe it as a little house sat up and hugging its knees.
Hmm. And when you're out in this kind of an environment and you got your notepad there as a writer, all sorts of beautiful thoughts, I would think, just flutter by and you want to grab them and write them down.
Absolutely. Although often I end up thinking about this in retrospect. I'll try and take a few pictures. Mm-hmm. But often when you're in these spaces, it's so important just to live in the moment. And even writing something down, you don't want to take your eyes off what's around you. Directly in front of this sail house was the second largest glacier in Iceland. And just to look at it, it was just so, it had such charisma, this thing. You know, it exuded this cold, cold charisma. It was really hypnotic. You would look into these deep, deep blues, all the blues you can imagine of this, you know, elemental, incredibly old, incredibly important glacier. And then to actually take your eyes off it and write something down would almost feel like a dereliction of duty, you know, because you need to sort of soak it all up, take it all in.
This is the quintessence of travel, what you're talking about. This is Travel with Rick Steves. If you ever wanted to really get away, and I mean really away, then you'll enjoy the stories of travel writer Dan Richards. His book is Outpost, A Journey to the Wild Ends of the Earth. And in this book, he takes us on adventures to 10 remote cabins and refuges in some of the most hostile terrain on the planet. Dan is a Royal Literary Fund Fellow at Bristol University in England. We have links to Dan's work with this week's show at ricksteves.com/radio. So Dan, you talk about these little huts and these sheds and whatever we call them, and they do have interesting names. In Scotland, what is it, a boothie or a bothy?
A bothy, yes.
Tell us about arriving at a bothy in Scotland.
Well, I think the word bothy comes from, there are several sort of derivations, but if you can imagine a booth, it's a single room dwelling. And again, you're arriving after a hard day's slog. It's Scotland, so, you know, it rains and then it really rains. And if the sun is shining, it's probably still raining, you know. And you'll be hiking over maybe some moorland, or maybe you've come off the Cairngorm Mountains and you're just immersed in this amazing plateau of mountains and gorse and heather and moorland. And then you see on the horizon again a little bothy, this little former crofter's hut, perhaps, a little house, a little dwelling, and you get in. And one of the most amazing things about Scottish bothies, and bothies exist all over the UK, there are some in Wales, there are some in the Lake District, you get into this very simple dwelling, and there are the marks of the people who have been there before you. And it really put me in mind, there's a wonderful poem by Philip Larkin, and the poem is called Home is So Sad. And the lines go, "It stays as it was left, formed to the comfort of the last to go, as if to win them back."
I've got a cabin I rarely visit up in the mountains outside of Seattle, and it's like that. I never know who was there last, and sometimes it's been months, but you still feel the spirit of the people who were there last and how they left it and what they must have done and the fun they must have had. And then you get to take that story and carry it forward.
That's it. And the carrying forward, I think, is such an amazing thing of a lot of the places I visited in the book. The bothies and the sail house, they are generous architecture in as much as they allow onward movement. They allow further adventures into, as you said earlier, apparently completely inhospitable terrain, but within them, hidden, are these jewel-like dwellings allow you to spend a night in relative comfort. The Scottish have a word, rough stuffing, they call it. So, you know, you don't find a bothy, you don't find a sail house, you end up sleeping in a relatively dry ditch with your pack as a pillow and a coat as a duvet or a, you know, and that's rough stuffing. And the alternative to that is this amazing bothy.
Oh, give me a bothy. I'll take a bothy any day over rough stuffing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you can have a fire in a bothy. You know, that's great.
It is kind of cool to think they're not the end of the road. They are a depot on the way to somewhere in most cases.
Absolutely. Yeah. They're a kind of silo, I think, you know, because some people leave, you know, you might get candles, you might get matches, you might get some food that's been left that's kind of in a tin. You might, you know, you might even get biscuits. I mean, that's real luxury out there, you know.
Dan Richards documents his adventures in his book Outpost, A Journey to the Wild Ends of the Earth. He also co-wrote Holloway, which we spoke about with Robert McFarlane in a previous edition of Travel with Rick Steves. You'll find web links to Dan's work at ricksteves.com/radio. Dan, you were talking about a shepherd's hut in Switzerland. Can you describe that to us?
There was a writing hut that I went to in Switzerland. There was a shepherd's hut that's in the Swiss chapter, which is Roger Deakin's kind of shepherd's hut. He was an amazing nature writer from Britain. So I'm visiting his farmstead in Suffolk in this chapter. And really, I juxtapose this very, very simple, almost little caravan that he had on wheels that he would move about his estate, and he would write, and there'll be a little pot-bellied stove in there and a wonderful, quite uncomfortable horsehair mattressed bed. And you had your own little world in there. And I juxtapose this with a really space-age treehouse that I visited in Switzerland, which is part of Jan Michalski Foundation's writing. I suppose it looks like a fortress, but I think really it's a kind of residency program. Mm. So writers can go and they're given everything that they will need to write. And one of those things is solitude, but also they're given solitude also from the ground, as in they're suspended in this amazing brutalist plywood treehouse with all mod cons. You've got underfloor heating and things like that. Mm. It's the sort of thing that a Silicon Valley tech entrepreneur might build in upstate New York, you know? But you're in the Jura Mountains of Switzerland, and it's for writers. And it was a really interesting juxtaposition because, for one, you've got Roger Deakin's very, very Spartan space, and in the other, you've got this super high-tech, almost sci-fi Swiss little cube that's very Blade Runner. And then at the other extreme, you have, again, this just enough architecture to make you aware that you're not completely outside. So I was juxtaposing those and seeing which might be better for the creative process.
And
everything.
How was it, Dan? I'm fascinated in that because I can just see the rustic shepherd's hut, and then I could see you in this super high-tech pod. Did you try writing and thinking and organizing your thoughts in the high-tech pod?
I did, but it's strange. You know, the parts of that adventure, I spent 6 weeks in that pod. It's exactly the right word you use. It was a pod. Mm-hmm. And the nights I loved best were the stormy nights where you'd get the snowstorm and you'd get the gales coming in,
right,
and you would see these triple ply windows, but they would warp, you know, you'd see them almost breathing with the storm. Such was the elemental force outside.
Whoa.
And you would feel the whole pod begin to move on its hawsers. And it felt for a moment like you were in a ship in the middle of a stormy sea. And those were the elements I liked best, where nature almost tried to get back on an even keel, because you can be in this kind of almost hermetically sealed box,
yeah,
away from everything, where you can't hear the birds, where everything is automated, you know, everything is digital. But nature will always find a way. And the parts that I loved most were the stormy elements. And also there was an amazing weekend where the pod developed several leaks. And so you could hear the dripping of water and, you know, the fusing, yeah, of electricity. And there's something in me that likes the chaos of that. And that's the bits I really enjoyed.
So your book takes us all over the world. Tell us a little bit about being at that lighthouse, that French lighthouse with centuries-old stone slowly losing its battle with the sea.
This is Cordon Lighthouse, which is just off the coast in the North Atlantic. It's quite near Bordeaux. A lighthouse has been on this particular sandbank at the mouth of the Gironde estuary. So that's the main river going into Bordeaux for centuries and centuries. And the lighthouse that's currently there, the foundations of it, the first, say, 10, 20 meters of it, go back to the 1600s. Mm. They're Palladian. They're made in the most amazing stone that often needs to be replaced. You have the most amazing carvings on it, and it's very, very Palladian and beautiful. And then above that, you have what people would generally recognize as a lighthouse. You know, you have this long tapering tower, and at the top you have a lantern room, and that's where Fresnel developed and tested his amazing concentric rings of lenses. But to enter that building is incredible. You go in, mm, and it feels like you're in a cathedral or a church. And the first floor is actually an apartment for the King of France. You have the most amazing classical architecture going on. The bed isn't there anymore, but you have all these busts of great statesmen. You can tell you're in an old building because France has not really had a king for a while now.
That's
and
right.
Then you go above, and the next floor up you have this amazing chapel to the Virgin Mary with this coffered ceiling that's like the Pantheon in Rome. And then you go further up, and all the time you're going up these little spiral staircases in stone, and it feels like you're going up a belfry. You could be inside a conch shell or something really organic. And then you get up, and there is another area. It's amazing.
All at the same time, you can be whipped by the fury of the sea all around you, and you're all alone.
Yes, it's incredible. I was with, on that particular occasion, a wonderful guide called Jean-Marie. And when we actually were at the top and we were in the lantern room and we were looking at the works, he was saying that he has previously been up there in a 200-mile-an-hour gale. And he couldn't feel the tower moving, though he knew that it was, because it was all relative up there. There was so much going on. But the actual movement of the light, the way that they keep that lubricated is they have it in a small pool, a bath of mercury, liquid mercury. And he was suddenly aware that there were splashes of mercury on the floor around his feet. And suddenly he was aware that in this massive maelstrom, the whole stone tower was moving like an oak tree. The stories that he tells, it was incredible to be in his presence. And a lot of the time in the book, I met, unexpectedly, the most amazing people. I would go and I would try and be alone. But often there are the most amazing characters who pop up and act as my guides in this book. And I was incredibly lucky and also incredibly grateful to those people who kind of populate these unpopulated areas.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been talking with Dan Richards. Dan's book is Outpost, A Journey to the Wild Ends of the Earth. So Dan, all of this makes me, I find it like an amazing vicarious adventure. Was part of your reason for writing this just to give people something fascinating to read about from their couch? Or did you want to inspire people not to visit these places, but just to realize that that's an option? What was your reason for writing the book?
I had several reasons. One was to show people that these places exist. Another was to really open their eyes to the fact that a lot of the ends of the world, this idea of these wild places, they're very vulnerable, they're quite fragile. And to suggest that maybe should you wish to visit, there are certain ways that you can do so without causing harm. The idea of leaving no trace was very important to me. And in the final chapter, when I go to Svalbard, it's a revelation to me, traveling with dogs on a dog sled, how much better that is, both as an adventurer, as a traveler, both sonically, you don't have the noise of the snowmobile, you have the wonderful padding of the dogs, the speed is so much more animal, it's so much more human in a way. And also it gave me the opportunity to actually take in and really enjoy and become steeped and soak up the landscape I'd gone to see. I think so much travel these days is fast travel. You go to a place and you try and juice it for all of these experiences. And as much as anything, I think Outpost is about this idea of traveling slowly and then spending time in the place you wish to visit, not trying to wring it out as if it were a dishcloth, but to try and just, you know, be in that space and to really appreciate the world we have.
Dan Richards, the book is Outpost, A Journey to the Wild Ends of the Earth. It sounds like this experience for you has been good for your soul, and we could all use a little bit of that. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you so much.
Whether you like to explore mountains and caves or you prefer a stroll along a lake, I'll bet you'll enjoy the outdoors in Slovenia. Find out why next on Travel with Rick Steves.